So I want to thank the Nashim Tzadkaniyas for making the arrangements, especially Freddy Spagel. And Freddy put cards on the chair so that if somebody has a question, so you could wait, you write it down, and then afterwards at 9:30 there'll be a few minutes for questions, which is easier in the past when there are halacha shiurim. What's often happened is that someone has their inyan, this one has that inyan, and then people get sidetracked and get confused. And it's bad enough that I'm going to confuse them with what I'm saying, but to get confused with what everybody else is saying in the middle. We're all here because we love Shabbos and we want to keep Shabbos the right way. And we have this funny feeling inside of us throughout our lives that some things are not exactly where they should be. It's a funny feeling, especially many chevra these days did not grow up in homes where they saw everything clearly, even in from homes. When it comes to Shabbos in the kitchen, there are many things that are not necessarily done kahalacha, not, God forbid, because of any neglect or intentionally, simply a lack of information or seeing things in different homes, hearing different opinions. Hilchos Rabsa L'Shabsa, the laws of Shabbos are many and extremely complex. And it's one of the hardest topics in the world of Yiddishkeit to teach, Hilchos Shabbos. Because of the complexity, and because each and every one of you knows that there are so many different shitas, so many different views that are found among the poskim. I'm not even talking between the Svardisha poskim and the Ashkenazisha poskim, but even within the Svardisha world and within the Ashkenazisha world, there are many, many different views. So how is it possible to even dream of covering anything significant in two shiurim? First of all, I don't believe it's going to be just two shiurim. I don't think that's possible. The two shiurim are a beginning. I think we'll have to do a few more, Mr. Shem, until the summer, and we'll see if necessary after the summer as well to continue. I want to make it clear from the beginning that my approach to doing this, I hope, will be very clear and will be very direct. I'm always going to be giving the view that is most widely accepted and most widely practiced within Klal Yisrael. I will have a time separately where I will discuss certain very important distinctions between how Ashkenazim do things and how Sfardim do things. And I will from time to time mention that the Sfardim, in this situation, the Sfardim are more strict or the Sfardim are more lenient. I will from time to time mention that. Otherwise, don't become frightened if you hear something that initially sounds either more lenient or more strict than what you've heard and what you've seen. It could be that it's a variant opinion, there's a different opinion, and I'm only going to be talking about the most widely accepted views, the most widely accepted practices of Jews or Hashem and Mitzvahs. I am not, Bechlal, it's not my way to get into stringencies, chumras. There are certain chumras, there are certain stringencies that I will mention. But I will tell you that this is a chumra. I will not give the impression that it's mainstream halachic behavior. I will tell you that there are those who are more strict and do things this way or that way. But I will not present it in such a way to give the impression that everybody has to do it that way if that's not true, if that's not the case. We're going to begin with the laws of Bishul on Shabbos, or the laws of cooking, Bishul b'Shabbos. It's important that there be a short introduction. After the introduction, I hope that the practical halachas, which we'll do, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, very much lamaisa, not going to be going into the machlokes, Rambam and Ravid, and their Ran holds like this and Tosfos holds like that. Going to be going straight, and then there'll be permit some time for questions afterwards, and you can keep the cards, and we could talk about things more and have additional classes afterwards, at the end, whatever, to make sure that all of us should be able to do the Ratzon Hashem and give nachas ruach to the Bar Olam. Shabbos is the biggest nachas that Hashem has from us, and we have to do things the right way. The prohibition of Bishul B'Shabbos. The Issa of Bishul B'Shabbos, as you know, is an Av Melacha. It's one of the 39 forbidden Melachas of Shabbos. You know also that all of the 39 Melachas were learned from the smichas, the connection that we have in the Torah between the mitzvah of Shabbos and the parasha of Melechas HaMishkan at the beginning of Parashas Vayakel. From there we learn that those melachas, those forms, types of labor, of work, that were necessary in the Melechas HaMishkan, in the Mishkan, that those are the types of melacha that would be the forbidden 39 melachas, the Ovis melachas, the main categories of melachas that are forbidden on Shabbos. In the Mishkan, Bishul, cooking, was used to prepare the dyes, the colors that were necessary for the curtains of the Mishkan and for the big day kahuna, the garments that the kahanim were wearing. What is the hagdara? How does the Torah define bishul? What is the definition of bishul, cooking, in halacha? The gather, or the definition of bishul according to halacha, is when a transformation of either a solid or a liquid takes place by means of heat, by means of fire. That's the definition of bishul. Therefore, when solid foods or when liquids are in some way enhanced or improved upon by means of esh, by means of fire, that's an important point, the esh, the fire point, because we'll see, there are other ways of cooking. When that takes place, then one has been over on the Isser, one has violated the prohibition of Bishul on Shabbos. Therefore, even let's say there is a type of food that one can eat raw, and many people do eat it raw, but through the bishul, through the process of cooking, I am enhancing that food. I prefer that the string beans be cooked as opposed to having them raw. Even though people could eat them that way. But by cooking something, by cooking this, I am enhancing it. I prefer it to be cooked. That by doing that, I have performed the melacha of bishul. Therefore, even when it comes to water, that halach understands that when it comes to mayim, when it comes to water, bishulam mashbicham, that there is something that is enhanced, there is something that is improved in the water by cooking the water. Similarly, the din is that even if something is partially cooked, and I could theoretically eat it in this partially cooked state, and all I'm doing is completing the cooking on Shabbos, the gemar habishul, I'm just completing that which was already done before Shabbos. The gemar habishul itself, according to halacha, which makes this food, again, better, it enhances the quality of the food, that too is considered to be bishul midaraisa from the Torah. So additional bishul, additional cooking, is also the melacha, this forbidden act of bishul. Similarly, also, we find that in halacha, it's also forbidden midaraisa to heat up objects, even if it's not food, such as mateches, such as metal. Heating up the metal, to bend it, to shape it, wax, and so on. There's also an iser of bishul. The way earthenware, pottery, the way that it was done in the past, and even now it's done, is that it's taken and it's put into the oven in order to make that which is soft into a solid That transformation that takes place through heating, through cooking, is also considered to be Bishul Mideraisa. The Rambam in the ninth parak of Hilchos Shabbos, Halacha Vav, words it very clearly. Klolo Shodav, the general principle is, Bein Sherifa Guf Kosher Be'esh, whether you take something that was hard and you soften it by cooking, Oy Shehikshe Guf Ra, or there was something that was soft, and by cooking you make it hard, Harizechayev Mishum Mevashel. You chayev on the Malacha of Mevashel. Aleph, Beis. What is the meaning of Bishul Be'esh, cooking with fire? So the most obvious is roasting and so on, where something is being cooked directly on a flame, on a fire. That's obviously cooking. Roasting is sliya, directly on the flame. However, according to Halacha, even if it's not directly on the flame, but it's keneged ha'esh, next to a fire, across from a fire, but enough that it could be heated up to be cooked to reach that temperature, which we'll talk about a lot. It's able to reach that required temperature that's considered cooking, even if it's not on the fire mamish, but it's keneged the eish. Also, it's cooking midaraisa if there is something which is mafsik, something which is obstructing between the fire and the food. Most commonly, it's called a pot. So when you have a pot, and there you have the surface of the pot and the walls of the pot are somehow in between the fire and the food, the fire and the soup, whatever it might be, the din is that that's still considered to be cooking midaraisa. What about electricity? So this, of course, was something that presented the poskim of the 19th century with a tremendous challenge to define the nature of electricity and how it applies to Hilchos Shabbos. The general consensus of the poskim is that electric cooking is asur midaraisa, is forbidden from the Torah, that the coils being heated up through electricity is considered halachically to be defined as fire, and therefore it's forbidden from the Torah to cook with electricity. As the years went by, then we have this new interesting bria that's called a microwave oven. A microwave would again present new challenges, because here we have Bishul without any fire at all, without any eish at all, but some sort of a molecular event that's taking place in the microwave oven. Here there's a tremendous machlokes haposkim. There's a huge disagreement of poskim regarding this issue of whether it could be considered bishul. Is this the way of bishul? Is this considered cooking midaraisa or midrabanan? Since there's no eish mamish, there's no actual fire, neither electric or conventional fire. B'chol ofen, nevertheless, it really doesn't make a difference, since we can't use electric appliances anyway on Shabbos. And between the digital readout and the electricity that's being used, whether it's the Reis or Drabonin, it's a machlokes haposkim in general with the electricity, Ben kach, we are not allowed to use the microwave on Shabbos. There could perhaps be a nafkimina if some food would have to be prepared, God forbid, for someone who's sick. Would it be preferable to use a microwave as opposed to using a regular oven? But it's not really something that's nogeya to us on a regular basis. Beis. Gimel. By way of introduction. And it's at this point that many people who try to learn Hilchos Shabbos become very confused, and we're going to keep it very, very simple, so that when we get in a few minutes to the practical application of these principles, I think it'll be pretty obvious how it works. It begins to get complicated because there's also a type of bishul that takes place betoldos ha'esh, which means, literally it means, the offspring of fire. That means when something is being heated up, but it's not being heated up on a fire or even next to the fire, for instance. You have a bowl, you have a pot of water that was cooked on the fire, and I've taken it off the fire. It's no longer cooking, it's no longer on the fire. That pot, however, is still very, very hot, the pot of water. It's not on the fire, and it's not next to the fire, but it's very hot. And I could very easily cook something by immersing it in this pot of water. I could put something in this pot of water and cook it. This pot of water that was heated on the fire, but is no longer on the fire at this moment, is defined in halacha as a kli rishon. I know that many of you are familiar with these terms and that you've heard them, so we'll do a little chazar. This is called a kli rishon, the first level of a kli. The original kli in which cooking took place is called a kli rishon. When it's on the fire, it's a kli rishon al ha'esh, on the fire. When it's not on the fire, but it's still hot, it's a kli rishon shelo al ha'esh. That's not on the fire. Now, Chazal have determined, and we're not at all interested in what scientists have to say on this subject, Chazal have determined that there is a din of bishul, there is a halacha, there is a prohibition of bishul in a pot that stood on the fire, that was on the fire, even though it's no longer on the fire, as long as the contents of the pot, whether it's water or something else, soup, whatever it might be, or a salad, as long as the contents are still at the temperature of Yad Soledisbo, which we'll call for now, we'll borrow a term and say boiling hot, but it is not the temperature of boiling. I don't want to confuse right now with the numbers. I'll give a paper and we'll have a list with all of these numbers and everything. You don't have to worry right now. But as long as the contents of this original kli, even though now it's been taken off the stove, it's sitting on the counter, it's sitting on a table. It's called a kli rishon because it's the original pot. Chazal have revealed to us that there's still a din of bishul. If I take something and I put it into that pot, as long as the contents, the water or otherwise, of this original pot that was once on the fire, as long as it's still at that temperature of Yad Soledisbo, which literally means that the hand recoils, we'll talk about exactly how that works, that the halach is that there is still a din of bishul. There is a view, this is a stricter view of the Magen Avraham, I told you I would tell you that, there is a stricter view of the Magen Avraham that is brought down the halacha in the Rav Shulchan Aruch, therefore many Lubavitchers are careful with this. The Magen Avraham, and then later on, the Baal HaTanya held that it's preferable to be machmir, to be strict, even if the contents of this pot are no longer Yad Soledisbo, even if they're just warm, that you should not use it to put anything in there. That is not the accepted view in Klal Yisrael, but it's a significant view, since it's of the Magen Avraham and the Rav Shulchan Aruch. But that's not how generally it's kept. We're only concerned if this kli rishon is still hot. Then this kli rishon gets a mazel tov, because the kli rishon has a baby. That's why it's called toldos ha'esh. And the mazel tov is because the kli rishon had a kli sheni. So what's the kli sheni? I now take the contents, and you're going to see how this applies to everything we do in the kitchen on Shabbos. I now take the contents of the kli rishon, typically the soup pot, whatever I was cooking in. I take the contents of this, and I pour it into a second utensil. This soup, let's say, might still be very hot. I took it straight from the kli rishon, picked it up, and poured it into a kli sheni. Still very hot. took it right off the fire, poured into a cliche. Chazal have determined that since that pot, meaning the second pot, the klisheni, this new baby, since the klisheni was not heated on a fire, it never experienced the fire itself, therefore its walls were not inflamed and heated in such a way by a fire, so Chazal have determined that the din is that no matter what it feels like to you, no matter what it seems to the reasonable mind, Chazal have received that the din is that this klisheni is not mevashel. It does not have the koach, does not have the ability to cook typical foods. We'll come back later on. Perhaps there are some that are called kali bishul, certain foods that are very delicate and perhaps could even be cooked, considered to be cooked in a klisheni. But generally speaking, a klisheni is not mevashel. The second level of kli is not mevashel, even if the water or whatever else is in there is mamish yad saladis bo, 200, 300 degrees. Doesn't make a difference. That's the din. The din is that the klisheni, in general, is not mevashel. Does not cook. The next level is not kli shlishi. The next level is called irui kli rishon. Irui means pouring. Irui kli rishon means the following. What we just learned that a kli sheni, that we just learned that the kli sheni, that the second pot is not mevashel. That's only when what's in the second pot is no longer has any relationship with the first pot. It's a second independent pot. I pour into the second pot. It's sitting in the second pot. And now we have a new kli that's called a kli sheni. However, if there is still a relationship between the kli sheni and the kli rishon, which means that I am pouring from a kli rishon, I am pouring from the kli rishon directly onto something that's sitting on a plate, in a bowl, or anywhere else, but I'm pouring from the kli rishon, let's say it's a kettle or a pot of some sort, and I'm pouring that boiling food or liquid directly onto something which is sitting in a second pot. That is called irui kli rishon. You understand the difference between a kli sheni and irui kli rishon? Kli sheni means I have taken from the kli rishon, I put it into a second pot, then I want to put something else into the second pot. That's called kli sheni. That's not mevashel. But if I have something sitting in an empty pot or an empty bowl, and I take the kli rishon, I take the kettle off the fire, I take the kli rishon, and I have something sitting in an empty pot, and I pour boiling water from the kli rishon directly on to this food or whatever it is that's sitting in the second pot, that's called irui kli rishon. I am pouring from the kli rishon onto something. There is still a relationship between what's in the kli sheni and the original pot. There's a living relationship because I am pouring directly onto something that's in the kli sheni, as opposed to just pouring into a kli sheni and then taking something and putting it into the soup bowl, whatever. So the din is that as long as the kiluach is taking place, kiluach means the stream of water, or the stream of food, or liquid, whatever it is, as long as that's leibedik, right, it's still alive, it's still streaming, the din is that is mevasha, that does cook, even though it's all going into a klisheni. But as long as there's a kiluach, as long as there's a current and a stream that's still coming from the kli rishon, which has the sufficient heat to cook, Yatzalad Isbo, the din is that's called mevashel. That's called cooking. Then we have irui kli sheni, which I don't think is necessary to explain. But Iri klisha, iri klisheini means when I have something that's in a klisheini, might still be hot, and I pour it into something else or on top of something else. Stam food and stam liquids are not considered to be heated up by iri klisheini. Even though it feels hot to me, iri klisheini is generally not a problem. At the end, we'll talk about certain exceptions. But generally, iri from a klisheini onto something else is not a problem. And finally, we get to the lowest madrega, the lowest level of kalim, which is a klishlishi. So now, this food or this liquid has had quite a journey. It's gone from the original kli rishon. It's been emptied into a kli sheni. And this kli sheni has then been emptied into, or part of it has been placed into a kli shlishi, into a third vessel. The din is that you're allowed to put food and liquids into a kli shlishi, again, even though it's hot, it's piping hot. You're allowed to put into a kli shlishi. The kli shlishi does not have a koach, does not have the strength, according to halacha, to be mevashel, to cook. Even things that are kalei bishul, even those things that cook very easily, the classic example would be tea leaves. Even those things that cook very easily do not cook in a kli shlishi, in the third vessel. Do not cook in a kli shlishi. There's no issue of also the irui and so on. It's finished. The cooking problem has completely stopped, has ended by the kli shlishi. Now let's talk lamaisa. We'll go very quickly, and again, if there are things that are unclear or that you'd like to ask, please write it down. I don't think we're going to be able to finish bishul tonight, but a significant part we'll be able to finish. Let's talk first about stirring and spooning. Stirring and spooning, is there a word spooning? I don't know. Taking stuff out with a spoon. Stirring and taking things out with a spoon. Huh? Ladling. That sounds like Yiddish. Ladling. Most poskim absolutely forbid stirring food, even if it's fully cooked, while it is on the blech. Even while it's on the blech, all the dinim of the blech we're not talking about tonight. We're going to get to mitzvah the next time. But the poskim, most poskim forbid stirring food, even fully cooked food, while it is on the blech. Therefore, a klal, never ever stir a pot while it's on the blech. While it's on that part of the blech, where it's very hot. We'll talk about on the side. But you should never stir food, never stir a pot while it's on the blech. Keep in mind that even if you remove the pot, even when you remove the pot from the blech, it has a din of what? What kind of a kli is this? It's called a kli rishon shelo al ha'esh, but it's a kli rishon. And therefore, it may not be stirred. It may not be stirred. The stirring, even though it's completely cooked, is mashbiach, it improves. That's why we stir. It makes things get cooked better and everything evenly. This is a kli rishon. While it's on the blach, out of the question. Even when you take it off the blach, it's a kli rishon, and it may not be stirred. You can remove the contents with a spoon, or with a ladle, either when it's on the blach, but you have to be very careful when it's on the blach, because if it drips all over, it'll be a problem. Either while it's on the blach, which is not wise, it's better to move it over, or when you take the kli rishon, like a pot of soup, you take it off of the blach, you can remove the contents with a spoon, but no stirring. Remember that the insert of a crock pot is a kli rishon. The insert of the crock pot is a kli rishon. And if you want to stir it, you cannot stir it while it's in the insert, even when it's not in the crock pot. You cannot stir the contents of the insert. Even if you take it out, you cannot stir the contents of the crock pot. You take the contents of the crock pot and you pour it into a serving bowl or something else. Of course, the option is to wait till it cools down, but that wouldn't make the oilam happy. So you take the insert of the crock pot, you do not stir it even when you put it on the counter, you do not stir it in the insert. You take the insert of the crock pot and you pour it into a serving bowl or something else. We now have a kli sheni. We have a kli sheni. And in the kli sheni, I am allowed to stir. Now you can move the pot, as I said before, all the way to the side of the blech that is not Yad Saledis Bo, not next to the burner, but all the way to the side of the blech, where even if it would sit, theoretically, even if it would sit for day and night, it would not reach that temperature. All the way to the side of the blech, where maybe it'll get warm if you would just put your finger, you could even put your finger, and most likely it wouldn't even burn your finger. All the way to the side of the blech. You can move the pot to the side of the blech that is not Yad Saledis Bo, and you could spoon it out from over there. You cannot stir it. Do not stir on the blech. You can spoon it out from over there, and then you're allowed to move it back to the hot spot on the blech. Again, as far as dishing out the food, you move it over. You either take it completely off the blech and spoon it or ladle out the contents, or you can move it to the side where it's not Yad Saledis Bo, the edge of the blech. You can spoon it out, and then you can move it back to its original place on the blech. Of course, provided that it did not cool off. This just takes a moment or two. You move it back to the hot spot on the blech. Stirring should, again, I repeat, stirring must not take place in the klirishon, not when it's on the fire, not when it's on the blech, not even when it's off the fire. You always pour the contents of the klirishon into another serving bowl or something, and then you can stir it. You do not stir in a klirishon, whether it's on the fire or whether it's not on the fire. You don't stir in a klirishon. Two, removing the lid. The question of removing, the issue of removing the lid of a pot, of a charlant, a soup, this is a very common mistake that people make. A klal that I want to introduce here, and it's going to travel with us throughout the shiurim as long as it takes. One should always try to finish cooking all of your food, that it should be fully cooked before Shabbos. You will see as we continue that this will save you many, many problems. Try to see to it that all of the food is fully cooked before Shabbos. And you'll see as we go along the difference that makes. It is not good to be left with partially cooked food before Shabbos. It should be all completely finished, and all you're using the blech for, or we'll talk about the oven, all you're using that for is to keep things warm, to keep things hot, not for cooking. It's not a good idea. Even though there are ways that it can be done, but there are much more complications when the food is not cooked. So, never lift off the lid of a pot containing partially cooked food, because then you're not allowed to put the lid back. Because it's obvious that by putting the lid back onto this klirishon, by putting the lid back onto this pot, I am accelerating the process of cooking. If the food is fully cooked, so again, never put the lid back on food that's fully cooked. So if you want to take a peek because you think that maybe it's not done, that's a mistake. You can take a peek, but then you can't put the lid back on if it's not fully cooked. If it's partially cooked, you cannot put the lid back on. So make sure it's cooked before Shabbos. And you just want to see what's doing over there. So if it's fully cooked, you can take the lid off and you can return the lid, even though you might get nervous, you might hear some bubbling when you put it on. In halacha, it's not a problem. If the food is fully cooked, you're allowed to put the lid back on. You can also have something if you'd like in between. And you're allowed to put the lid back on. So keep in mind that one should only take a look at fully cooked food, at fully cooked challah. You don't take a look at partially cooked food. Therefore, make sure that it's cooked before. Three. Another common problem. You have a cup that's wet inside. It has little drops inside, either because it was washed or because there was something in it before. But you have a little moisture inside the cup. And you would like to put water from a klirishon, from a hot water pump, from the chaynik, from the tea kettle, whatever it is, from the water kettle. You'd like to put water into this cup. But the cup has little droplets of room temperature water in it. Common sense tells you that when you take from the kli rishon, remember, now we have irui from a kli rishon, I'm pouring, there's a stream of water, directly onto little drops of water that are sitting in the cup. That's a problem of bishul. So what do you do? So some poskim say that it's enough to, the most lenient view is that it's enough to vigorously shake out the water from the cup. And that you don't have to worry about some little film of water that might still be in there, tiny little drops. As long as you vigorously shake out the cup, you can then pour from the pot or from the kettle into this cup if you shake it out. This would have to do with the baby's bottle as well. We'll talk about preparing baby bottles in a minute. So this lenient view holds that if you shake out the cup, that you don't have to do more than that. That's enough. Most poskim disagree with that. Most poskim say that you need to first shake out the bigger drops and then to take a towel and to dry out the inside. Obviously, you have to be careful that there shouldn't be a malacha of schita, of squeezing, which is not going to happen unless you don't first shake out what's in there. And there's a lot of water in there. So you should first shake out the contents of the cup or of the bottle, whatever. You just shake it out. And then it should be dried out. You don't have to go crazy and make sure that it's absolute. But you should dry out, according to most poskim, you should dry it with a towel and just be careful that there shouldn't be any problem with schita. So this is very commonly done. A person had a little tea and finished the tea. And there's a little bit left inside. There's a little bit left at the bottom of the cup that's cooled down already. Over the course of drinking, it's cooled down. And you would like to add some more hot water into the cup. So this is how it works. A, if the remaining water is still warm, meaning you drank the cup relatively quickly and the remaining water is still warm, does not have to be Yad Seledesbo, even if it's a little warm, a little bit more than room temperature, it's a little bit warm. Then you are allowed, according to Halacha, to add water directly from a Kli Rishon, as long as the water inside is a little bit warm. From the leftover of the original cup of tea is a little warm, then you're allowed to pour from the Kli Rishon. We're applying the principle of Ein Bishlacha Bishl. We'll talk more about that also. You're allowed to pour into there straight from the Kli Rishon. B, if the tea, whatever, inside the cup has cooled down already, then you need to shake it out and to dry out the cup. Now let's get back to the ladle, because the ladle is going to be a very important part of what happens in making things easier in the Shabbos kitchen. The ladle that you use to serve the soup should be kept, first of all, it should be just kept in the pot in between servings. Because otherwise you're going to have the same problem that you have with your little cup of tea. If you take out the ladle in between servings, and now the drops of soup cool down, then you'd have to start drying out the ladle. Just keep that in mind. So it's better to leave the ladle in between servings. Just leave the ladle in the soup. If you didn't, then just make sure that the ladle is dry before putting it back into the pot. Similarly, if you want to add some more hot soup in a person's bowl, somebody wants some more soup, or somebody wants another serving of hot cholent. So we're talking about taking from a kli rishon, if that's the situation, taking from a kli rishon onto the soup or onto the cholent in somebody's bowl. Now here's where the ladle comes in handy. Because when you use a ladle or a serving spoon, then what happens? Then I no longer have a kli rishon. According to most poskim, once the soup is in the ladle has a din of a kli sheni, or the serving spoon has a din of a kli sheni. And now I have this soup or this cholent on the ladle or on the serving spoon, which is a kli sheni, and I could put it now onto the person's plate or into the person's bowl, even if there's soup in the bowl that has cooled off, or there's food on the bowl in the bowl that has cooled off. If the soup is still warm, or if the cholent of the food in the person's on the person's plate or bowl is still warm, then the din is that I could take from the kli rishon, even without a ladle. I could take from a kli rishon and put it into the bowl of soup on the person's table, in front of the person, or the person's cholent, if the soup or the cholent is still warm. If the soup or the cholent are not, and it's either it's cooled off, then I would either use a kli sheni, or I would have to take the bowl and dry it out. Whatever's there, if it's cooled off, if the soup inside the bowl, the little leftover soup, has cooled off, or if the cholent is no longer warm, and I want to take a kli rishon and pour from the kli rishon into this person's bowl, I have to make sure that it's dry. It's the same principle. I have to make sure that it's dry, either by shaking it out or using a towel to make sure that it's dry. I could save myself that trouble either by pouring the contents of the kli rishon into a kli sheni in the kitchen, and then serving it from there. Or if I use a ladle, then I can count the ladle as a kli sheni to put it from the pot into this person's soup bowl, even if the contents, the leftovers of the soup bowl, have cooled off. This all applies to salting food as well. It is forbidden, absolutely forbidden, to add salt into a kli rishon. You are never allowed to add salt into anything on the blech. You're not allowed to add salt even to the kli rishon when you've taken it off the blech, because it still has a din of a kli rishon. It's just a kli rishon shelo al ha'esh. You are not allowed to put salt into a kli rishon. Salt can be added to hot, dry food in a kli sheni. So now the contents of the kli rishon has been put into a person's plate, or it's been put into the serving bowl, into the serving dish. You took out the insert of the crock pot. You pour from the insert now into a serving bowl, and you salt it in the serving bowl. Fine. That's fine. You can put salt into the solids that are in the kli sheni. As far as liquids are concerned, such as hot chicken soup, you only add salt into a kli shlishi, not into a kli sheni, which means you should not add salt unless we have in front of us a kli shlishi. Now most soup bowls that are sitting in front of the person at the Shabbos table are already a kli shlishi. You had the pot was the kli rishon, the ladle is the kli sheni. You put it into the person's bowl, and the bowl is a kli shlishi. You can put salt, or you like to put mandlach. You know what I mean? What mandlach are, That's what they're called in English also, I guess. I don't know. What? Soup nuts. Oh, croutons. Yeah. So you can, those are deep fried. You can put salt or mandelach into the hot bowl of soup if the hot bowl of soup is a klishlishi. You may never put salt into the klisheni that has the soup in it, only into the klishlishi. Into the salad, again, into the salad, if it's a cholent. If it's some other solid food, then you are allowed, and we're talking about hot food, but there's an issue of bishul, the food's not hot, there's no problem. But you are allowed to put salt onto solid hot food in a klisheni, liquids in a klishlishi. So if you've ladled things out and you put it into the bowl, then you have a klishlishi, there's no problem to add salt into a klishlishi. Even putting solids, you do not put solids into a kli rishon, even if the kli rishon is not on the fire. For instance, those who like to put matzah in chicken soup. I don't mean chas shalom on Pesach, but to put matzah into chicken soup. So you are not allowed to put, even though it's a solid, you don't put it into the kli rishon. You don't put in the kli rishon, but instead you put that salad into a kli shlishi. Or there could be iru kli sheni. You put the matzah into the bowl and then you pour the hot soup onto the matzah, but never put even a salad into a kli rishon. Never put a salad into a kli rishon. Now this brings us to the subject of another popular item on Shabbos, which is lakshon, noodles. Now obviously, cooked noodles, dry cooked noodles, there are those who say that dry cooked noodles can be put into a kli rishon that's been removed from the fire. It's not recommended. It's not recommended, but the dry cooked lakshon can be placed into a kli sheni with soup and poured upon with a ladle, that is to be said. In other words, if the lakshon is dry, which is oftentimes is not the case, the lakshon is usually moist, is wet. If the lakshon is wet, which it usually is, the best thing to do is to put the lakshon into a kli sheni and then to ladle the soup onto the lakshon. You put the lakshon into a kli sheni and you ladle the soup onto the lakshon. That's iri kli sheni. Or you can take the noodles, and you can put the noodles, the lakshon, into the soup that was already put into the soup bowl. Then you can take the noodles and put them into the soup bowl. Either way, again, either you put the lakshon into an empty bowl and you pour from a kli sheni into or ladle or kli sheni another kli sheni onto the noodles into the soup bowl that are in the soup bowl, or you take the soup, you ladle it, or you pour it into a soup bowl. And then you could take the lakshon and put it into the soup bowl. That's how you take care of lakshon. Making coffee. A, you take a dry cup. If it's wet, make sure you dry it out. You take a dry cup. You fill the cup. B, you fill the cup with hot water from the kettle or a hot pump. Whatever you're using, you fill the cup first. So we now have, the cup is now a kli sheni, right? It's a kli sheni. I take this cup and I pour this into a kli shlishi. And then I put the coffee granules inside. There are those who are I'm going to tell you the lenient opinion, and anybody who does this is completely within the guidelines of halacha and should not be criticized. There are those who are lenient and say that you're allowed to put instant coffee, milk and sugar directly into a kli shein. Again, the preferable way, according to many poskim, is to first create a kli shlishi. I pump water from the kli rishon into a cup. I pour the cup, so that's the kli shein. I pour that cup into a kli shlishi, and then I put the coffee or whatever else I'm doing, I put into the kli shlishi. That's the preferable way, according to most poskim. There are those who are makel, that you can put instant coffee, milk, and sugar directly into that first cup, meaning into the kli shein. Never got to be in the kli rishon. But in the kli sheini, I can put instant coffee, milk, or sugar. Making tea. A. Many people prepare before Shabbos tea essence. The way to do that, and there's a maila to doing that, the way to do that is that before Shabbos, you pour boiling water onto a bunch of tea bags, and you create a tea mix, a tea essence. I think you all know this. You create this tea essence, and then you take the bags out. You take the bags out, and this essence may be added throughout Shabbos, may be added to a kli sheini. In other words, I could then have a kli sheini. I could take hot water from the kettle or from the pump. I put that hot water into a cup, and I could take from the essence, and I could pour some tea essence into the kli sheini. That's one way of preparing tea. B, as far as tea bags are concerned, tea bags can only be used in a kli shlishi. Even then, there are some poskim who are opposed to it. Many, many who are in favor of that, and it's fine. We do that in our house, and most chassidish poskim are fine with that, and there's a disagreement among those who are not chassidish, but at any rate, tea bags can be used, but only in a kli shlishi, and then you have to be careful not to remove the tea bags with your fingers, but to remove them with a spoon. The poskim were concerned that by digging at them and pulling them out with your fingers, you're going to squeeze. There's going to be a problem of schita. Therefore, you should take the tea bag out of the kli shlishi. You can use it in kli shlishi, but you take it out with a spoon. That it has a string. If it has a string, and you can pull it out by the string, you don't have to. There's no issue of touching the actual tea bag. You can do that also. But otherwise, you should use a spoon, and you should only use tea bags in a kli shlishi. Only in a kli shlishi, never in a kli rishon or in a kli sheini. Instant tea has the same thing as instant coffee. Some say that you could use it in a kli sheini. Others say you should use a kli shlishi for instant tea. Then, as far as a slice of lemon is concerned, a slice of lemon that you want to put in tea that's in a kli sheini. Right, you have a kli sheini with this tea that you made by using essence. You have a kli sheini with tea in it. Are you allowed to put lemon, a slice of lemon? So there's a machlokas haposkim. It's definitely forbidden to squeeze lemon into the tea. That's for sure forbidden. You're not allowed to squeeze the lemon into the tea. What about lemon juice? So lemon juice can be put from the bottle into the kli sheini, into this kli sheini with tea in it. There's a chiddush of the Mishnah Berurah. The Chofetz Chaim holds in the Mishnah Berurah that you can squeeze the lemon into sugar that's on the spoon. This has to do with the melacha of schita, squeezing a liquid into a salad. So the Chofetz Chaim says that if you have a spoon with sugar, you're allowed to squeeze the lemon onto the sugar that's on the spoon, and then put that into the tea. There are others who disagree with the Mishnah Berurah. The best thing, therefore, is to use either to use liquid lemon juice, or if you like, just to put the lemon into the kli sheini and let it sit there if you don't mind it, but not to squeeze into a kli rishon, or not to squeeze into a kli sheini. Use liquid lemon juice in a kli sheini. That's the best thing. instant soup. Most instant soups are pre-cooked. They were already cooked, and therefore they can be used on Shabbos by irui kli sheni. That means I have a kli sheni. I think we all know what that is by now, right? I take the water from a kli rishon, I pour that water into a kli sheni. I can take the kli sheni, and I can pour the kli sheni onto instant soup, which has already been cooked. These instant soups are cooked. That's irui kli sheni. Or if I prefer, I could always put the instant soup into a kli shlishi. I take from the kli sheni, I pour that water into a kli shlishi, and then I put the instant soup in. That's fine. You could always make instant soup in a kli shlishi. Ketchup, just another minute, and then it'll be time for some questions. Ketchup may be added to a hot salad food. I don't know if some people want to put it into liquid anyway, but ketchup may be added to a hot salad if the salad is in a kli shlishi, or even if the salad is in a kli sheni, but it's already cooled down. It's not yatzal edispa. Again, ketchup can be added to a hot salad if the salad is in a kli shlishi, the food was taken out of the pot, was put into the serving bowl, then was put onto the person's plate. That's what you usually have. Everybody's sitting with the plate in front of them. They could put ketchup, even though the chont or whatever the food is hot. They could put the ketchup onto the food that's on a kli shlishi. Or it could be put, even the ketchup can be put into a kli sheni if it's cooled down. If the food is cooled down a little bit, if it's not yatzal edispa. If the food it's still warm, it's even still hot, but it's not piping hot, I could put the ketchup even into a kli sheni. But most of the time it's not a problem because usually what happens is that the ketchup is being put when it's on, is being used when it's already on the person's plate. The plate is already going to be, in most cases, is going to be a kli shlishi. The last thing we'll do for now is a baby bottle. There are a few ways to take care of this. You can take the baby bottle, and you could warm it by taking the bottle with the formula, whatever, with the milk of the formula that's in it, and you could put it into a kli sheni. In other words, you pour from the kettle or from the pump into a kli sheni. I have hot water sitting in a kli sheni. I take the baby bottle. It should be dry on the outside, right? Shouldn't be any water, liquid condensation on the outside. I take the baby bottle, and I can put it into the kli sheni, even if this is going to cause the bottle to become very, very hot. Also, you're allowed to take a cold baby bottle, and put it near the fire, near the blech, not on the blech ever, but near the blech where it can warm it. It's not going to reach yatzal edispa. You put it on the side of the blech, by sitting there for a few minutes. By that time, the baby is probably hysterical. But you can put it near the blech so that it takes the cold out of the formula. It's not going to reach yatzal edispa on the counter near the fire. Just an important note that when you're doing anything near the blech, we'll talk about this again when we get to the blech. When you're doing anything near a blech, even when you're washing your hands for hamaitzi, be careful that you're not going to splash anything onto the blech. Or if you're doing stuff on the counter, then and you're pouring and doing stuff, then be careful it shouldn't splash onto the blech. That's mamish bishul. If you have things spritzing onto the blech, then you're cooking. So you have to make sure to do things a little bit on the side of the blech. Finally, I mentioned before the hot water pumps that are very popular now. You know what I'm talking about, right? Now, these hot water pumps created a certain commotion among the poskim because they have these indicators. They're not just indicators. They're a reserve of water that's going to be heated up. I'm not going to go into the pratim, into the details of how this works. It's not important for now. They can be used on Shabbos. It's preferable that before Shabbos, you pump out one cup of water. The water has to be always up to a boil. It has to be done before Shabbos. You don't plug that in by candlelighting. You plug that in, so it should be, that should be one of the things that the men do. You plug that in. That's because one of the few things in my life that I do, so I felt like I had to say that. So you plug that in enough time that it should get up to a boil before Shabbos. Then before Shabbos, at any point before Shabbos, after it's boiling, it's good to take out some in a cup and to just throw it out of the boiling water. If you forgot to do that, you could still use it. But even when you still use it, it's kedai that the first cup that you're going to take for then Shabbos, you should just spill out. Without going into the pratim now of how that works and the shilas that are involved with the water being heated up from that little thing, that is what should preferably be done. Again, make sure that the hot pump is always boiling before Shabbos. If you remember, try to spritz out a cup of the water before, just to spill in the sink. If you forgot, then on Shabbos, try to remove one cup of water. If you didn't do that, you could still use the hot pump, and if you did it, it's fine, it's okay. It's just preferable to remove a cup of the water before you start using it on Shabbos. Okay, so that's where we'll stop for tonight.